What is going on? This is the Ethos Clippers podcast coming at you on a Sunday afternoon as the Los Angeles Clippers coming off an upset win over the Brooklyn Nets yesterday on New Year's Day in what looked like a schedule loss from 10,000 miles away. But the Clippers somehow beat James Harden and Kevin Durant 120 to 116 on this podcast. I've got Dr. Shap of the Lob the Jam Pod and 213 Hoops with me today. Before we bring him in, folks, I gotta tell you that this is an Ethos Fantasy podcast, which means go ahead, please take a moment to follow at Ethos Fantasy BK on Twitter, the single most dominant basketball and fantasy news feed on earth. Get all your NBA news in one handy Twitter feed. It's faster than the competition and provides more analysis too. Again, that's at Ethos Fantasy BK on Twitter. Follow now. All right, Dr. Shap is here. He's in the house. Shap, I got to tell you, I thought the Clippers were going to lose by 30-plus last night. I thought they were going to get absolutely demolished. I know that your co-host thought so as well. That was definitely the best win of the year for the Clippers and the best regular season win for the Clippers in quite some time. You can obviously go back to last year. The comeback against the Atlanta Hawks was a pretty good one. Of course, you go to the postseason, you talk about the win against the Utah Jazz and what a win that was. But I got to say, man, this is one of the best wins that I've seen from the Clippers in quite some time. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, you know, I definitely thought that they were going to get blown out. I did not think at all for one moment that they were going to beat a Kevin Durant, James Harden-led team. I mean, James Harden came into Staples not terribly long before it and led a blowout win for the Nets then, though the kids brought it within 10 with like 4 minutes left in that game in LA. But I was expecting a blowout. I did expect, Marcus Morris was essentially a late scratch too for rest purposes. And I thought, oh, this is a great game to give him rest. Why not give everybody rest? It was kind of my thought, honestly, like bench everybody, give Reggie the day off, like rest everyone. And the Clippers had other thoughts in mind. They were just really, really good. It was a really exciting game. They were always kind of within distance. I believe they were down like 12. Maybe it was 107-95 or so with not too much time left. And they ended up winning 120 to 116. So that just gives you an idea of where my mentality was. I really didn't feel like the game was a game they were going to win at all until the very last minute. So it was really exciting. I was really excited when Terrence hit that corner three. You know, I kind of saw the play developing a little bit with that short roll, and I felt him getting that open corner shot. I knew his mom was there. I got really hyped for that shot. Like, that was one of those I'll remember where I was kind of shots, honestly, because you really felt it, all the momentum, and that was the shot. And it was probably the shot of the season so far. So It was wildly exciting. I had so much fun watching that game.
And for a guy in T-Man that we were all expecting to kind of be that one that takes 10 giant steps forward this season after what he did in the postseason, and he's been good but hasn't been spectacular this season, and for him to go and hit that shot and I mean to score 19 points in a game where the Clippers were extremely shorthanded. I mean, you mentioned it, no Kawhi, no PG, no Nick Batum, no Marcus Morris, no Luke Kennard, no Hartenstein, no Zoo, and no Brandon Boston Jr. I mean, you take out eight guys from the Clippers' normal rotation. I mean, you could say that Boston maybe is not in that normal rotation when everybody's healthy, but goodness gracious, that's not a game that you're supposed to be anywhere near a team that has Kevin Durant and James Harden. I don't care who else they may have out, but they're damn near close to fully healthy, the Brooklyn Nets, now after having everybody and their mother in protocols. But the Clippers just seem to somehow just channel the spirit of the last couple of years where they never say die and they continue to fight. They don't even have their head coach there. Brian Shaw is on the sidelines. It showed a lot about this Clippers team. And I think it says a lot, Dr. Shap, about what the Clippers' chemistry is at the moment. And we saw when they had Trez and what the locker room was like. It didn't seem like everybody was together. But it seems like now this team truly is going to fight every single night. And I think they really take that from their head coach. And I want to give a lot of credit to Ty Lue and what he's done with this team and the foundation he has set. Because I think if Doc Rivers is the head coach of this team, they get blown out. But because Ty Lue has come in and just put forth this, I want to say, blueprint for success, the Clippers have gone and followed it, and they've come together, and I don't think this happens under Doc Rivers. I truly believe that Ty Lue had a lot to do with it. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, you know, one thing I do want to give to Doc is I think this Clipper team, down all the pieces it is right now, is kind of the ideal Doc Rivers team. As much as I want to give Ty Lue a lot of credit, I love Ty Lue. I think Ty Lue is a championship coach. I think Doc Rivers is really good at getting an undermanned team to believe in itself, which we saw with the Orlando Magic, which we saw with the Los Angeles Clippers.
Yeah.
So while I do want to give Ty his credit, I do want to shout out to Doc for being really good under these specific circumstances. And I think we saw it a little bit with Philly. Philly has been pretty good at fighting hard without Joel Embiid this season. I think these are the circumstances that actually Doc did pretty decently in, and 18-19 is particularly a testament to that. And, you know, Doc Rivers, I want to say he won Coach of the Year with that Magic team that was really undermanned early in his career. The issue with Doc is his in-game adjustments and the fact that he was a player's coach to a detriment, whereas Ty Lue is like a player's coach to a positive. I think Doc essentially would have his seven-guy rotation and say, these are my guys. I'm not going away from this. The guys will adjust. They'll win games because they're that good. And that's how it is. I don't care if the guy off the bench is upset that I'm not playing him enough. I'm playing Montrezl Harrell 16 minutes in a row because he's good and he's going to get me wins. And that can work in a regular season, but with Ty Lue, it's the idea of next man up. And if you're not playing well, I'm going to bench you. If this matchup isn't conducive for you, I'm going to bench you. And it has nothing to do with you. It has to do with the betterment of our team. And I think that that's what this team embodies more than anything. You know, I do think Doc Rivers' teams kind of mailed in on themselves, but it's because Doc didn't make adjustments. The team just kind of would get tired out there doing the things that Doc would do 7 out of 7 games in a series and would kind of almost eat itself. It was really incredible. I never plan on rewatching that Nugget series because why would I do that to myself?
Yeah.
But in the moment, just watching the team just go through it and seeing those Trez minutes be so low in the negative and playing right into Denver's hands. I mean, Denver just knew that they were going to win that series after Doc just wasn't making any adjustments throughout the series. Like it just felt like the series was lost after game 6. And that's like really depressing to feel that way because that Clipper team had as much talent as probably a Clipper team will ever have. And I don't even want to think about the opportunity loss with that team because it was loaded. It was like the most loaded I think we could ever be. But the difference is I don't think we had a title coach. You know, I think we had a very good coach that gave you a certain floor, but I don't think he maximized the ceiling. And I think Ty Lue does that, particularly when it comes to a playoff setting with his adjustments in game. We see them. I learned so much about basketball just watching how Ty Lue adjusts from play to play down the stretch of important games. You know, that Lakers game was kind of a big microcosm of kind of Ty Lue's coaching with how Luke Kennard was run through actions, trying to destroy Malik Monk on switches, knowing that Paul George was going to get attention from Malik Monk and adjusting to see is Luke Kennard going to be the short roll guy? Is Luke Kennard going to pop out in the corner? Is Luke Kennard going to do this, going to do that? It was really cool. You could feel the chess match that Ty Lue was building in that game. And he just consistently does that down the stretch in games. And I love that about Ty. And while I want to give Doc his credit for dealing with undermanned teams, he just, there's a certain cap with how far his teams can go because of, unfortunately, his unwillingness to make adjustments, especially within a game, especially within a series. And, you know, Rick Carlisle almost beat him because of that with a much lesser team. And I do think we would have lost against the Mavericks with Doc. And I don't think we would have been in the Jazz. And I think that's a testament to the ceiling that Ty Lue brings to the team that Doc just didn't.
I did not expect that long-winded Doc versus Ty Lue explanation there, Shaf. That seems like you had something in your chest that you just needed to get out about those two guys. Because what's funny is what I was trying to say more so is the end of that Clippers tenure where he kind of lost the locker room and you had the Trez chemistry issue. And that's where I'm thinking that the chemistry of this team is infinitely better now that they've made that coaching change. So I'm saying that the end of that reign that Doc had on that team, I don't think they win this game because there's no doubt about it. Like you said, I mean, they went and they took a couple games from the Warriors a couple of years ago when they had no business winning some of those games. So there's no doubt that shorthanded, I mean, he did a good job. But I just think that Ty Lue, chemistry-wise, I think now what he's put in place with this team, and it's really a next-man-up opportunity for these guys, and they've done a really good job. I want to talk about the number one subject here because there's a couple things I want to discuss. But the first one is one that I'm going to toot my own horn here because I feel like I have been one of the few people.
This is Marcus, right?
No, it's not Marcus Morris, who, I have been saying that Marcus Morris is an infinitely better basketball player than people have been giving him credit for, and there's a reason why he was the number one option in the Knicks, and he's not quite Jermichael Green, and the contract for Marcus Morris was clearly was something that you needed to give to keep a guy like Marcus Morris. But no, I'm going to talk about the Bledsoe trade because there was a lot of Clippers Twitter that loves Patrick Beverley and what he brought to this team. And there's no doubt that Pat Bev was one of the most important Clippers on this team. But I said right when the trade happened that durability has been a concern with Pat Bev. And that's not the case with Bledsoe. And I was hoping not to jinx it when I said it. And it's something that was making the rounds on Twitter yesterday. Finally, everybody was starting to realize that, hey, you know, you have Paul George, who I said was going to rest some games. I didn't expect him to get hurt with what is a UCL injury, but you knew Kawhi was going to be out. You needed that guy who could give you offense and can lead a starting unit or lead a bench unit, and the Clippers did not have that. And Patrick Beverley's not a guy who's going to go out there and get you 15 to 20 points per game when you need it. And Bledsoe is that guy. And so now we're seeing that Eric Bledsoe has played in 27 games, or rather 37 games, and started 27. So 27 starts, 37 total games, whereas Patrick Beverley, on the other hand, has already missed, I believe, 12 games. I looked at the numbers before we started the podcast. They're at 35 games total for Minnesota. I believe he's played in 23, those, or maybe 27. I should look and make sure that's correct, because I want to make sure that I have those numbers correct. So as I'm talking, I'm going to tell you those exact numbers. He has played in 24 games. So he has played in 24 of the 35 for the Timberwolves, which means he has already missed 11 games, where Bledsoe hasn't missed any. So there's clearly something there, Shap, where the Clippers knew they needed a guy to be there. And I understand that the trade, you got rid of a guy in Pat Bev. You got rid of, frankly, a guy that was a fan favorite, but you needed someone there. And we're starting to see it, man. And I'm glad that people are starting to see the importance of Bledsoe on this team, because I don't think the Clippers are where they are right now without Eric Bledsoe. I mean, you look right now at the standings, the Clippers are sitting in sixth. Without him, I think they're sitting close to 9 or 10. And that's easily 9 or 10 because he's been there. And I don't think Pat Bev would have been the option for you with this team. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, man. Availability. I mean, I think it was friend of the pod at LA Clippers Film who tweeted out, you know, Eric Bledsoe has played 37 games this season. Patrick Beverley last year for the Clippers played 37 regular season games total all year. And that's just something you have to keep in mind. You know, Pat, people need to remember there's a lot of recency bias when it came to Pat Beverley being traded from the Clippers. We all love Pat. He is the heart and soul, or was the heart and soul of the team, and was a big ever since we essentially lost Blake Griffin, he was almost as synonymous with the identity of these Clippers as virtually anybody else, which is crazy to think because Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are also on this team. So I love Pat, but before he made his run, particularly in that Jazz series, guys were wondering, you know, is Pat Beverly, you know, a negative asset even? Like, can we even trade Pat Beverly for anything at this point? And then he made his great run and he showed us that he still has something left in the tank. He's playing well for the Timberwolves when he plays up there. But like you said, he's missed games this year. It's not just last year. It's not just, you know, even the year before that. Pat Beverly, since that 18-19 season, even before then, he got injured. I mean, Pat Beverly has had an availability problem with the Clippers ever since he donned on a jersey, said all the right things and made a lot of all the right plays. Smart player, smart as hell, you know?
Yeah.
Doesn't get enough credit for what a good basketball player he is. But the problem is he just gets hurt all the time. You know, he's an aggressive player. He puts his head in places sometimes he's not supposed to. And it can sometimes be a little bit reckless, and he's a little bit older. So he gets injured all the time, whereas Eric Bledsoe, you know, quite frankly, you know, Bled does not get injured all the time. He played 71 games last year in a shortened season, 61 the year before the shortened season, 78 before. He said essentially while the vast majority of these games consistently for many years in a row, and it's just been a very dependable player. And in a season where players are dropping like flies, Eric Bledsoe has been really important out there, man. He's just been a really steadying force. And of course, it's already been talked to death about how all of his shooting stats are kind of coming to the other way. You know, he shot about 40.5% from three in December, and he shot 4-for-6 yesterday. I mean, his shooting is eventually getting back to where his career averages were after they started out just abysmally. We're finding better places to put him in the roster. I don't think we did Eric Bledsoe any services early in the season by pairing him with George, with Jackson all at once. It just never felt like a great pairing. It made a little bit of sense maybe to take some reps away from George so he wasn't just getting the ball all the time, but it just really cramped up spacing. So I think we found something here with Bled as far as what makes him best out there. You know, I think that there is some utility with him and Reggie Jackson at the same time, but I think Eric Bledsoe needs to be touching the ball and running the offense when he's out there as much as possible, because that's just where his positivity is. Whereas it's not that for Patrick Beverly, you know, he's not that. And right now with this decimated team, you really see the utility of Eric Bledsoe. Eric Bledsoe carried this team yesterday. We're not winning. We're not even getting even close in that game without him. He had 27 on 8-for-12. He was incredible last night. And that is not a game that you win if you just insert Patrick Beverly instead of Eric Bledsoe with that roster yesterday.
I'm glad you brought up the shooting numbers, because I did an entire podcast. It was probably, I don't know, 2 months ago on Eric Bledsoe. And everybody needs to stop hating on him, because the guy was shooting 18% from three, and I said that's not something that's going to continue. I promise you.
Yeah.
The guy in his previous seasons, 34%, 34.4, 33, 34.9. The guy is not a bad three-point shooter, but like you said, he was being put in bad positions. And I know Joey Lynn, early on in the season, who's a friend of the pod and also a friend, obviously, of 213 Hoops,
yeah,
and that he was crushing the trade. I mean, he was destroying Bledsoe, saying how they were better off with Pat Beverly, and he put out some good numbers yesterday. Going to give him credit here. Said to start the season in 22 games, Bled was at 9.8 points per game, about 3.5 assists per game, and just over 2 turnovers per game, with a minus 81 plus minus. More importantly, he was shooting 42%, 28 from three. Now, since his initial move to the bench, where he was given the ball, and he said yesterday after the game, not Joey, but Eric Bledsoe said after the game, that he needed the ball in his hands more, in 15 games since that initial move to the bench, 12 points per game. So it's gone up from 9.8 to 12. His assists have gone up from 3.4 to 5.1, and the plus-minus went from minus 81 to plus 20, and his three-point shooting went from 28% to 43%. So the initial move was clear, and it goes back to the start of this podcast where you and I were talking about Doc Rivers and Ty Lue and the adjustments that Ty Lue has made, whether it's through a season, through a game, and for Ty Lue to understand, hey, I'm going to try this out. Okay, it's not working. Let's figure out a way to make it work. And he does figure out a way to make it work. Bledsoe goes to the bench. Now he's back in the starting lineup. They figure out what makes sense with Bled, and it's been a success.
Yeah, I mean, Bled now, you know, thankfully he'd been on the bench when the team was healthier in December through January. You know, he has a positive plus minus from December through January now, including last night's game. And yeah, you're right. I mean, his 3-point percentage has just been creeping up and up and up. He was, like you mentioned, at 18% in October, then 29% in November, and then 41% in December. And of course, he was 4-for-6 yesterday. So he's up to 34%. Near his career average now for the season. So things just kind of gradually needed to take its time. Like you mentioned, I don't know if Doc would have made all the adjustments Ty has already made within these past few months as far as trying to utilize Eric Bledsoe. It's another thing with Ty versus Doc. And maybe I took some offense to when Doc essentially threw Ty under the bus and said he was sitting right next to me. Yeah. You think he's going to make any changes right when he got, you know, fired and went to Philly? Yeah, because we have a big sample size of Ty Lue in Cleveland, and he won a championship there. So I do think it's different, Doc, and it has been very different. So, and we've already seen it with Eric Bledsoe. I think there's a blueprint now for Bled as far as how to utilize him with this Clipper team. And I'm hoping that it's just utilized. You know, I do think when the team eventually gets healthy that he should be still coming off the bench. I think he should be a kind of handcuffed to Isaiah Hartenstein. Because that pairing was very positive when they were out there. And he's going to have overlap minutes with Paul George, of course, but they probably should be minimized a bit because that trio, or that Paul George-Bledsoe combination even, just wasn't very fruitful on offense and not very helpful for Paul George. So while I do think that tandem will inevitably have minutes together, I think we have a lot of data showing that the offense kind of struggles with them out there together. So, you know, I think there's a lot of good stuff as far as what we can do with Eric. So I'm excited. I've been a proponent for Eric Bledsoe like this whole season. I've been kind of patient with him. I see his utility on this team, and he's a ball handler on a team that's just doesn't have many of them. And he's been doing this his whole career as far as playing point guard. So I'm glad that, you know, Clipper fans are starting to come the other way on him. You know, I was down on Bledsoe too for a moment. I'm glad that he was put on the bench, and now I'm glad that he's getting, you know, this time to shine a bit, because this is what he is. He's an innings eater. We keep talking about innings eating, and that's what Bledsoe does. And on a league just ravaged by COVID, he can really shine. I hope he doesn't catch it too. I'm just really, really, really nervous about that.
It seems like every single day the Clippers are getting somebody else that's entering protocol. Yeah. So let's just hope that's not the case. But I think I love that analogy there to bring baseball in there, an innings eater, because that's exactly what mm-hmm. he is. He's a guy that's on the floor and giving you minutes in production. And Tomer Azarli put this out yesterday. In the last five games as a starter, the Clippers, by the way, are 3-2 in that span. 19 points per game, just under 4 rebounds, just over 6 assists, and just over 2 steals per game. Shooting 49% from the field, 50% from 3, and 83% from the free throw line. So he's just been absolutely spectacular. And like I said, you don't get those numbers from Pat Beverly. I mean, I love Pat Bev. What he brought to the team was huge. He was tremendous defensively, but you just don't get that. Pat Beverly is not a fit for this Clippers team, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, I think Pat Beverly is a connector, whereas yeah. Bledsoe is like a heliocentric type of guy where the offense revolves around him.
Yeah.
Pat Beverly was a connector on offense where he would make the right pass. He would shoot the corner three. He was an underrated guy as far as making a quick move towards the rim and passing it out, because he was from that Maury ball of layups and threes, you know. So I think Pat Beverly was a connector, which is a big reason why a lot of people might miss him when this team is totally healthy, whereas Bledsoe is the guy that the offense revolves around. And they both have their pros and cons, but again, like you mentioned, man, that stat is staggering, that Bledsoe has already played as many games this season as Beverly played all of last year. It's wild.
Yeah, and they don't make that trade if Kawhi doesn't get hurt. I believe that Pat Bev is still on this roster if Kawhi doesn't get hurt, because they knew they needed somebody in there. So we'll see what happens now, obviously, with Kawhi when he comes back and PG. Yeah. I mean, there's been some optimism about the UCL injury, and it's a one that you look at and you see, and it's Tommy John in baseball, going back to what we were talking about, and out for the season, but not the case apparently in the NBA. So we'll see.
Yeah.
I'm not as optimistic as some are. I just feel like the Clippers kind of have a history with the injuries, and that it's never really as good as it seems. And it really, when was the last time we saw someone on the kind of the low end of, or the short end of a timetable actually return on that short end? It feels like it's always longer than that. With this Clippers, I mean, I don't know what, nothing against the training staff. It just feels like with the Clippers, it never goes their way when it comes to injuries. But you're optimistic, I assume, about PG and when he can return?
Yeah, I have optimism just from the president of this UCL injury in basketball players. It's rarely required. It's not ever from recent memory required surgery. I mean, our own Nicholas Batum on his non-dominant hand also went through a UCL injury and came back about 6 weeks later. 4 to 6 weeks is the general timetable. You know, I don't blame you for being a little bit pessimistic. Whenever you hear that dreaded reevaluated in multiple weeks for a ligament, yeah, you know, we already have PTSD from Kawhi Leonard. So I don't blame people for being kind of worried. And I would also not jump to any conclusions until he's reevaluated in 3 weeks and they do repeat imaging, another MRI. I would wait for that. But just from the precedent of this injury, it feels like something he can come back from. It feels like that 4 to 6 week timetable is possible here. And if that's the case, you know, it's all the difference. And the Clippers just need to pile up some of these random wins that they had yesterday, and they need to repeat it a few times over in this just dreadful January schedule. But I have some optimism about Paul George just from previous injuries, and it's not a Tommy John's injury. It's really just what everybody needs to realize. This is not a baseball injury. This is not the same thing that baseball players go through. It's completely different as far as the injury a pitcher would go through when all they do is use that elbow versus yeah. a basketball player. So fingers crossed. There was a lot of doom and gloom when it first happened. There's still some, you know, worry amongst Clipper Nation. I don't blame them at all. But all we can do is just look from the previous injuries and hope that Paul George kind of leans towards that timetable. You never know. A reevaluation always makes you worried about surgery. But let's just be positive and hope for the best with him and look at what's happened before. So I think that that's fair to kind of look at, you know, tentatively. And this reevaluation is coming up in a couple of weeks. So we'll know sooner than later as far as the vibes around the locker room with that injury.
Yeah, whenever you see reevaluate, that does not mean that's when the player's coming back. It means when
he's not coming back.
It means it's when they're looking and they're going to see, okay, how's he doing? All right, what are the next steps? So you may see, hey, reevaluate in 4 to 6 or 6 to 8. That doesn't mean that he's going to come back in 4 to 6 or 6 to 8. That's not the way this works.
These ligament injuries, and you know, I think with Kawhi, there was this idea that he had a degree of his ACL sprain that was between 1 to 2 or something like that. And then there's an idea that if it's you have a grade 1 sprain, that you know that's just time. Versus if you have a 2 or 3 or a complete tear, then you're going to need surgery. And it sounded like he just had a partial tear. They were hoping that there would be a timetable where he would do better, and he didn't. But that's different. That's his knee. And that's a very common basketball player injury versus this elbow injury is a little bit more unique, and it's just not needed surgery, you know, much in the past. So it's scary, especially with Clipper fans, because it feels like we just went through this, and it's, you know, natural to be kind of negative when it comes to ligaments for long-time Clipper injuries, Clipper fans.
Yeah.
But I would just promote patience and hope for the best. And gosh, just hope for the best.
Yeah, that's all you can do is hope for the best. Hey, we have a brand new daily fantasy partner at Sports Ethos, Thrive Fantasy. Prop up with Thrive Fantasy on their mobile app or at thrivefantasy.com. Use the code ETHOS, ETHOS, when you sign up to get a 100% deposit match bonus on your first deposit up to $100, plus either 2 or free game tickets to play. Pick player props on the biggest names playing every night. Score points when your props hit, and the players with the most points with a share of the nightly win a nightly share of the prize money. And check out our Sports Ethos DFS team on or their podcast for advice on winners. Again, that code is ETHOS over at thrivefantasy.com. So, I want to have this discussion, and it's one that I'm curious to get your point of view on. I have found it very difficult to get locked in to this season in general, not just the Clippers, but just in general. It seems like every single day, and it seems this way because it's true, we're seeing 5, 10, 15 players placed into protocols. And then now you with the Clippers specifically, because this is a Clippers podcast, it really seems like every single game there's someone new that is missing. And it's getting really upsetting to watch and get kind of involved in this season. I mean, Law Murray has been putting together a kind of a tracking list of the guys that have missed. I'm trying to find it, but I'll find it by the time we're done talking about this. And it seems like before every single game, someone is being put into protocols, and it's upsetting. And here he is. So Morris at OKC, Nunn versus San Antonio, Reggie Jackson at Sacramento, Scrub versus Denver, Wright versus Brooklyn, Boston against Boston, Zoo at Toronto, Kennard at Brooklyn. And of course, you have Ty Lue as well. I really am finding it hard to just get involved in this season. First of all, no Kawhi hurts. But just having all the protocol stuff, how do you feel about this season? Do you agree with how I feel, or are you finding it, you know what, this is, it's the Clippers, no matter what happens, I'm locked in, and it's just like any other season?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. And honestly, I wrote an article about this a few years ago when the bubble started, about just the moral dilemmas when it came to basketball in the COVID era, even then, even in the bubble, which was a much more controlled environment. And it's hard, man. It's hard to really find a lot of joy knowing that players are in harm's way constantly. The Clippers right now are about to go through a brutal, are going through a brutal road trip through January, right fresh off the new year when everybody's traveling back and forth. They've already made international travel to Toronto, and they're in, you know, in New York, which is like the epicenter of where everything's building back up when it comes to Omicron. And, you know, I'm a physician too, so it adds an even more of a moral quandary for me. I enjoy the Clippers, you know, like I watched the Boston game. I mean, the Toronto game and the Boston game. And, you know, I enjoyed all of it because I'm a Clipper fan. You know, I can watch, you know, the Agua Caliente Clippers and find something to invest in because I love the team. But I think it's just been very dangerous for players, not just the players, but for media. You know, I've gone to games and you feel people. You feel the fact that you're in this indoor arena with a lot of fans who sometimes, you know, maybe you're not wearing masks sometimes or are wearing masks. Or it's a lot of variables to consider for a variant that's been very transmissible. And it's been hard to stay locked in, honestly. It's been hard not to, when you're away from games, to think about, like, what are we doing with this season? Like, is it worth it? Like, is the product suffering so much that, you know, is it worth even playing these games? And players are dropping like flies. Like, it's been really hard. And I think it's important for fans to realize, you know, we can love our team, we can enjoy our team, we had a great win yesterday. But you can also kind of be, you know, a little bit conflicted, you know, because of the fact that people are in danger's way, the product is suffering because of it, guys are going in and out of protocol all the time, and there's still human beings out there with, you know, their own things going on. It's not easy to be quarantining. So it's been difficult, and I don't blame anybody out there for feeling that internal conflict about it. And being kind of discouraged with a lot of what's going on, how the NBA has handled things. So
I think the main point that you brought up was the product on the floor. I mean, you're looking at teams that are putting together. I mean, you look at Toronto a couple games ago, and the lineup that they had was just awful. I mean, absolutely terrible. And you're seeing it across many teams in the league when you're having numerous starters out of the lineup. And it's not great. I don't think it's great for basketball, and I don't think it's great for the fan. And I mean, as a Clipper fan, you obviously love to see guys like Amir Coffey get the opportunity that they otherwise would not have gotten. And to see yesterday what Moon and Gabriel and Ennis and what those guys did for the Clippers, and they would have never gotten that chance. But it's not good for basketball and for watching basketball. I mean, sure, you're going to have those moments where Amir Coffey has a 5-for-9 night, 3-5 from 3 like he did yesterday, and he's been a much improved player. But at the same time, I mean, you want to see the guys that are the starters, the ones that are being paid to be those producers of talent. I mean, you look at the Clippers, and they didn't have Zoo for a game. And when I saw Zoo was going to protocols, I'm like, oh, here we go again. And then you get Kennard in protocols. You're like, oh my God, like what are we doing? Like, what is the point? And it's just really discouraging to see your favorite team just have so many guys missing. And of course, like I said, you're happy to see some guys get the opportunity, but you're not looking for a bench of Winslow, Ennis, Gabriel, Moon, and Keon Johnson. I mean, that's not what you're looking for when you tune into a Clippers game. And of course, they got the win against Brooklyn. It's great. But I just don't like the product on the floor, and it's just upsetting to see all the guys you like and you root for just sitting on the sidelines. It sucks.
It super sucks. Like, I don't even know what more. I think you covered it pretty well. Like, it's been a big bummer this whole time, and the product is really suffering. I mean, I think that this is the most, you know, watered down season so far compared to even the last few, you know, because it felt like we weren't getting hit as hard last season. And then the bubble happened. And while that was kind of an aberration, you know, it was a very controlled environment, that everybody had kind of these equal, conditions. And now it's just chaos, you know, like we played the Raptors and actually the Nets pretty much at full strength, and we had nobody, and we had a championship's worth of roster on the bench or not even in the building because of protocols. Like, it's just it's really, really variable, and that's the only thing you can kind of count on this January is that things are, you'll never know what's going to be on the floor. There's like, you don't have any idea who's going to be in protocol, who's going to be out of protocol. The Clippers have had a person every game in protocol, and it's just been kind of random. And yeah, I mean, Bledsoe was not feeling well in that Raptors game.
I was waiting for him to go into protocol. I was waiting for that. I was stunned that he didn't.
Yeah, so that's the shoe that I'm hoping doesn't drop, but that was really unsettling, you know, hearing a guy say I wasn't feeling well, and I played. I'm like, really? So it's just, it's really unsettling. It's just such a weird age of sports in COVID. It's gonna be a weird retrospective when this is all said and done. But yeah, it's the product is really suffering out there. Like, there are times, there have been players who essentially have said that they're just working on muscle memory without knowing a playbook out there. And that's not what NBA basketball is, you know? So it's really unfortunate that the product is suffering like this. But the league has been pretty vocal about they're just going to, you know, soldier on. So the product's going to suffer. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, like you said also, the competitive balance is completely off. I mean, you're obviously going to have injuries that happen, but it's just the competitive balance when you're facing a Warriors team, for example, when they don't have Steph because he's hurt, is very different than facing a Bucks team with Bobby Portis, Giannis, and Middleton in protocols. I mean, it's just completely different, and the competitive balance is not the same as you would like to see. So it's fine. I mean, like you said, we soldier on, and for the Clippers, it's a really tough road ahead. We'll talk about that when we close things out, but the other side of this, and I brought it up briefly, was that you're getting guys to get playing time that normally would not get playing time. I mean, we obviously started this pod talking about Bledsoe and Mann, and obviously you know what you're going to get from Reggie Jackson, but Amir Coffey, man, 14 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, and a steal, 32 minutes. This is a guy that's really, you talk about innings eater, this is a guy that's now starting to get some major minutes for the Clippers. You look at his last several ball games, 25 minutes, 23 minutes, 25 minutes, 28 minutes, 28 minutes, and 32 minutes last night. It's a guy now in Amir Coffey that you can count on, and he's not going to score a ton. I mean, before the last couple of games, he was at 9 or fewer, but he's producing, and he's on the floor, and he's providing some energy. And you got to love when you get a chance to see a guy like Amir Coffey just improve as a player. What have you seen from his play that has impressed you the most?
So the most impressive thing to me about Amir was that short roll pass to Terrence that essentially put the game on ice. Not essentially on ice, but put the game out of reach essentially for Brooklyn. That short roll stuff, he's had a little bit of juice, a little bit off the dribble. He had that really tough, I want to say it was a bank shot against Pascal Siakam in that Raptors game. He had a couple of plays off the bounce, you know, even yesterday. We've already known that he's a transition guy. He's young legs. He can finish in transition. He has an up and down three-point shot, but, you know, streaky, and he will shoot it, which is important. And he hit a huge three yesterday. That great coffee is for closers call from Brian Seaman.
The best.
He's the best. But the best things that I'm seeing from him is he's a defensive guy. He's been picking up guys like Kevin Durant and Siakam and guys that would seem like they punch above him, but he's being utilized more and more as a defensive stopper. Even before this stretch, you know, when he got the call before, even with Paul George being out there, he's kind of relied on that Nick Batum sort of role. And he's showing that he's a connector a bit like Nico Batum, which is high praise considering Nick Batum's probably been the second best Clipper all season when he's out there. So he's shown a little bit more that short roll pass, that playmaking juice, that ability to get his own in half court sets is stuff that we really haven't seen from Amir consistently last year, and he's showing more of it now. His transition game and his ability to help push the pace has always been there. He's been really vital to this Clipper team. But I mean, Amir is just a rotation guy at this point. Like, even when Paul George comes back, you know, before Kawhi Leonard comes back, I think Amir is a end of the rotation type of guy. And before Paul George is back, he's absolutely a rotation guy. I think if we're out any of our wings between George, Batum, Morris, this guy is going to be playing 20-something minutes. He's absolutely ahead of Justice Winslow when the team is healthier. As good as Justice Winslow has played, you know, he's been playing essentially a small ball center. And unfortunately for Justice, you know, two of our six or seven best players are centers when this team is completely healthy. So I think Amir has really shown that, he's not just a fringe guy. He's an NBA player. Yeah. He should be paid as an NBA player. He's not just a two-way guy anymore. And he's taking leaps subtly every year. And now with a bang, these last few games, he has been completely vital to these last few games. So this PG-less stretch, there's been moments in like multiple four or five games where Amir's carried the team one way or the other. So I'm really, you know, really happy with Amir. You're proud of Amir if you're a Clipper fan, because you didn't know about him a couple years ago, and he's absolutely shown what his worth is now. And he's been great. He's been really, really great. He's going to be really important to this team during this January.
Tip of the cap to the Clippers developmental staff now. Terrence mm-hmm. Mann, Brandon Boston, Amir Coffee. I mean, Coffee in his second season. He now has a steal in his last six games, at least one steal in his last six games. He has a three-pointer, at least one in his last five games. So he's producing offensively, he's producing defensively, and like I said, he's giving you major minutes. He's played 23 or more minutes in the last six games. So you got to love to see that if you are a Clipper fan, a guy that is one of your own that's producing and someone that's now given the chance, and he's now 5 for 9 from the field in the last two games. You got to love that. 3 for 4 the game before that. So, I mean, you add that up, 13 for 22. It's not too shabby in the last three ball games, which means that he's not afraid to be a part of that team and not afraid to shoot. And that is probably the biggest thing, is the guy that's not afraid and he's willing to get out there is absolutely massive. All right, before we
7 for 15 from three during that time too.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. I mean, those numbers mm-hmm. are staggering. I mean, he was 3 of 5 yesterday, 3 of 7 the game before, 2 of 3.
8 for 15, so even better. He's been great. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, 8 of 15, and he's hit 2 of 3, 3 of 7, and 3 of 5 last night. Monstrous. All right. Happy holidays, everyone. This is the season of giving, but stop giving your personal information to your ISP. On top of overcharging, your ISP is allowed to legally sell your browsing history to third-party advertisers for a ton of cash. Take your privacy back with ExpressVPN. Head to our special promotional link at expressvpn.com/hootball. Yes, they still have the old name, to get 3 bonus months on a 12-month subscription. It's super easy. Turning it on just takes one click, and it works great with streaming services like Netflix or sports packages like League Pass 2. Once more, that's expressvpn.com/hootball. Grab those 3 bonus months now. All right, Shap, what are the expectations in the next month? Because You got Minnesota coming up at home, and it's funny because we've been doing these predictions on every pod. It's like, all right, coming up, what do you see? And, you know, it's all right, okay, New Orleans or Oklahoma City, that should be a win. And then, of course, they lost by one at Oklahoma City. But you got Minnesota at home, and I think you kind of have to take advantage now of these home games because you look at the schedule, and the Clippers do not have many home games at all. I think it's 8 home games between January 3rd and February 13th. I mean, that is really rough. And just to go quickly, versus Minnesota, at Phoenix, versus Memphis, versus Atlanta, versus Denver. Okay, cool. Then it's at New Orleans, at San Antonio, Indiana, at Denver, at Philly, at New York, at Washington, at Orlando, at Miami, at Charlotte, at Indiana. And that takes you through the month of January. It really seems like the Clippers have to take advantage whenever they're at home. And the expectations for me aren't very high coming into this stretch because you're facing some very good teams. Being on the road is not going to be easy. I think if you can finish January as a top 8 seed, I think you got to take that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. yeah, I agree with that. If you could finish January as a top 8 seed, I mean, what, they're like 17 games. We've already won one that was kind of found money. The important games here, I think this Minnesota game is really important. That Indiana game on Martin Luther King Day is really important. Unfortunately, they have a couple of their weaker teams, Orlando and Indiana, those road games on a second game of a back-to-back. And third or four, which is really unfortunate because those are winnable games that might feel like schedule losses. You know, you look at some of these more higher echelon teams, particularly a team like Phoenix. You know, if Jokic is around Denver, you know, you anticipate losses there. Those are losses. You know, if you can get through these 17 games with, you know, near 500, if you can get 8 wins, oh man, 8 wins, like, give that to me right now. Like, I would take it and run. If you can get 7, you know, I think the Clippers are good enough that you can bank on 4 to 5 wins, even with this stretch, just with some randomness and some, you know, and some of these games that are a little bit more attainable. The question is getting to 7 or 8 wins. If you can get to 7 or 8 wins and approach near 500 status during this January, then you're in your gravy, really. The problem will be if they hover around 5 wins or 4 wins, and then that falling behind 500 enough will really kind of put you a little bit behind the eight ball. The only thing is that everybody is dealing with COVID. Everybody is dealing with protocol. The teams are going to be random from a game-to-game perspective. The rosters are going to be random. And the Clippers have already shown that they can catch a team sleeping. You know, they've already shown that against Brooklyn. So it's hard to pencil some of these games in as losses. There's some games that you kind of figure that the Clippers could lose, but maybe they can sneak them out. So if you can get a couple of those random wins like they did yesterday, you know, 2 or 3 of them against teams that are higher echelon, like Phoenix or Denver, or even like a team like Miami, if you can pull out some of those random wins, then things are going to look good. It's really hard to go from a game-by-game basis. You know, even on our pod, we often close podcasts looking ahead to 3-4 games in the future. I feel like those days are behind us because you just don't know who's going to be on the court anymore. So you really just got to hope that the team can scratch to about, you know, 8 and 9 or 7 and 10 or so. And if they can do that, I think that's really good. You know, I think if they can crawl around there and get 7 to 8 wins versus 4 to 5, that's a big positive. You know, or 5 to 6. You know, if you can just get closer to 500 for the January, that'd be great. If they can even sniff 500, that would be great. But I'm anticipating, you know, this is going to be under 500 for a month, and it's just a matter of how many random wins you can pick up along the way, because this team is going to be a little bit random without Paul George.
Yeah, and they're feisty, but the schedule is not kind, and it's hard to say. No. It's hard to say, Shap, that a game in January is a must-win game. But it really feels like that game tomorrow against Minnesota is must-win because you look at Phoenix versus Memphis versus Atlanta and versus Denver, and okay, those teams in of itself are very difficult, but that's going Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday. I mean, there's not a lot of rest between those games. Memphis and Atlanta are back-to-back. Both those games are 12:30. We know how the Clippers fare in those 12:30 games, so it's very difficult. And I'm looking at might see a lot of losses. But to your point, you never know. I mean, Denver could easily have Jokic enter protocols, and all of a sudden you might be facing Denver without him. Or
And Denver's bad. Yeah. Like, they're not good. They just have Nikola Jokic. Like, they're, which is not like a small aside, but the rest of that roster has been bad. Like, they've given up big leads routinely because they just can't stay afloat without Jokic. It was actually the opposite in our game against Denver, which is the aberration, the exception, not the rule. But they're not a good team. They just happen to have one of the three worst matchup single individual players that the Clippers have faced in the last 5 years. So Denver's not a good team. So you could win against Denver. It's just things are going to have to be kind of clean. You know, after that Denver game, New Orleans, San Antonio, Indiana, with rest in between every one of those games, those are winnable. You could, if you can go 2-1 in that three game stretch, that would be really positive. So there are little takeaways through the month for sure.
Yeah. So we'll see how it goes. Before we sign off, I want to also remind you all to use the coupon code HOOPBALL20 at manscaped.com for 20% off your order and free shipping. And also check out our pals at mybookie.ag. Use the coupon code HOOPBALL on the third page of sign up to unlock deposit match bonuses there as well. All right, Shap, we can find you at The Lob, The Jam Pod. We can see you writing at 213 Hoops. Where else are we promoting you, my man?
No, I mean, that's mostly it. I mean, you can find, I tweet pretty much just about hoops on our Twitter handle. 213 is where I don't write really, but maybe I'll put something out soon. I write like something once a year or so now. I used to write more recaps back in the day, but that's where all of our wonderful writers are. You know, we're independent. Check out our writing. We have great stuff, pre-game articles, post-game articles, great editorial pieces. Lucas Hand just put out an article on the edges of the Clippers rotation, particularly these 10-day contracts that Xavier Moon and Gabriel and Ennis, as far as their utility for this, you know, it's a really nice piece. So we're always putting out good stuff there. Check out the podcast. We come to you after every second game of a back-to-back and every game that, you know, that has time in between. So we pod a lot. We have a great rotation of guys, all worth checking out too. Whenever they come on the pod, they're all fantastic. Great stuff. So yeah, follow at The Lob, The Jam Pod, and check out our great material on 213.
Yeah, your ability to pod as often as you do is certainly impressive. It's something to be admired. I gotta tell you that. I know it's been difficult to, with everything going on, to try and keep up and do a pod and get a guest. So you've been great. I was happy that we were able to schedule a time. We were initially supposed to go yesterday, and then I realized, you know what, the Clippers play today, so why the hell are we recording a podcast when they're going to play later on? Of course, they upset Brooklyn.
How about that sixth sense from you?
Yeah, so there you go. We got lucky there with the Clippers winning that game before we potted. You can follow me on Twitter at BDMarcus. Of course, at Ethos Clippers is where you can find our podcast posted as well. For Shap, I'm Brandon. Until next time, have a good one, and go Clips.